Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a special edition, we take you inside the Milken Global Conference, which is this huge gathering that happens every year in Beverly Hills. It's been going for more than three decades now. Michael Milken started this thing, and he really brings together the big leaders in the world in tech and finance and medicine and politics and sports and entertainment and so many different fields. Both parties represented, everybody having these civil, interesting discussions. It's really something. And we went there this year for the first time. We were invited to be a moderator of a panel. We moderated a panel on LA wildfires. We also had one-on-one conversations with Dr. Oz and with Linda McMahon, the Secretary of Education, and Jennifer Siebel Newsom. We had political discussions with Frank Luntz and with Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times and Sarah Longwell of the Bulwark. We put all that together in this 22-minute special, taking you inside. So let's start right now at the beginning with the Secretary of Education.
Talk for a moment about how you think of your job, because Republicans have talked about this idea of getting rid of the department that you are now leading. How do you see your job?
Well, I can tell you the president was very clear when he asked me to serve as the Secretary of Education. He said I would be successful when I'd fired myself. So I know what my job mandate is. But what the president really means by that is to take the bureaucracy out of education.
So we're here in Southern California, home of the Los Angeles Unified School District, one of the largest in the country, also one of the poorest in the country. 80% of kids in that district live in poverty. And there's a lot of people there that are scared that if the department shrinks in size, that they won't get the help that they need. What do you say to people that are afraid that the most vulnerable are going to get hurt by these kinds of reforms?
Well, you will still have the same people in government here unless you change, but the funding, even in the president's new budget, the funding for Title I, which services that community the most, that funding is preserved.
And in terms of you, just to get to know you a little bit, a lot of people obviously know you from wrestling and other different things they've done over the years. How has all of that life experience prepared you for this role?
I think any experience you have in life, but let me go back to even when I was in college. I've always loved education. I actually majored in French in college. I wanted to be a teacher. I got my certificate to teach, but my career path went in a different direction. But I did serve on the State Board of Education in Connecticut, and I've been on a Board of Trustees on a university for 16 years. So it's not as though I've been totally apart from any form of education. But what the president said to me when he asked me to take over this job, because I told him, I said, look, I don't come from the world of education. Now, wouldn't you want a professor or a superintendent? He said, no. He said, because I'm really looking at the business of the Department of Education. I want a business executive and a leader. He said, and you fit that bill perfectly.
The symptoms are going to be generally subtle.
For years, we featured Dr. Mehmet Oz here on The Issue Is and his old job as host of the Dr. Oz Show.
We can make the system run better.
Now, Dr. Oz is at Milken after being appointed by the president to run the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
There's so much reporting out there that President Trump wants to cut Medicare, and you're saying that's not true, it's not going to happen.
In every scenario that I've seen, the president wants to protect Medicare. He said it. He said he wants to love and cherish these programs. The reason you should believe him is because the main thing we have to do is align the states and the federal government with what they wish to accomplish. If we just do that, which, by the way, if you're on a sports team playing music, trying to get your family to get along, what do? You align people.
So I know you're really focused on trying to find waste, fraud, and abuse in the Medicare system. What have you found so far, and what kind of number have you found so far?
Oh, it's billions and billions of dollars. I'll give you one concrete example, which also speaks to the malalignment. We have billions of dollars spent a year providing Medicaid insurance to people who have lived in one state then moved to a different state. That happens in America. We've got 50 states. But if you have your health care Medicaid insurance in California, but you also have moved to Nevada last year, well, then we, the federal government, are paying for you both in California and in Nevada. Mm. Well, I'm not getting twice as good care nor twice as many people covered. I'm just literally paying for services you're not getting. But here's the catch. Is there an incentive for the governor to tell us about that? No, they're getting extra money they can use for other issues that are plaguing their state. So it's an example of where we have a malalignment.
We got to spend a lot of time with you during COVID virtually.
Yes.
You co-hosted with us many times, been on The Issue Is many times. It's great to see you in this new capacity. What's it like now being in government on the inside? How's it maybe different from what you thought now that you're actually doing this job?
It might be the best job I've ever had, because you're surrounded by very mission-driven people. In my case, they came into government because they wanted to make a difference in health. They are very sharp. Many times they feel like they haven't been unleashed to go out and actually deal with the problems that they wanted to tackle. And that's part of what government has to do, respond to a lot of different stakeholders. But this is a generational opportunity for us to make a difference, for us to actually tackle these big challenges, like the lack of alignment between states and federal government, to allow people to be empowered, to really have tools at their fingertips, maybe on their phone, that's going to allow them to have insights about their own well-being and their doctors to share that same opinion because they've got the same data flow. This is what we're going to change in America more than anything else. Allowing what's happened already in IT and finance, how information has changed, how we live our lives, it's finally come to medicine. My life has been about empowering people. I did it in medicine practicing at Columbia. I've done it on the show with you here in Los Angeles. I want to make sure that CMS is responsible to the American public.
Being there for people, bringing them together through food.
California First partner Jennifer Siebel Newsom hosts a discussion with celebrity chef Jose Andres, whose World Central Kitchen serves people around the world after disasters.
We are in the midst of a youth mental health crisis.
And with author Jonathan Haidt, whose book, The Anxious Generation, makes the case that devices like smartphones are harming young people. The Newsom administration working to get cell phones out of classrooms.
I think we are hitting a tipping point, which is great in terms of awareness that our children should not be given devices at the earliest of ages. They should not be exposed to social media until they're 16, and that there needs to be a collective effort. And so what we're driving, and we've been driving from the get-go, through California for All Kids and through my nonprofit, the California Partners Project, that our children are still children and need to be children until they're 18, and they cannot be introduced to the Wild West of technology with porn and sex trafficking and peddling drugs and what have you. And that really we need to offer them a play-based childhood. It's a holistic approach to raising children that's about more time in our state parks, more time in our public libraries, more of the community school model where there's self-care, social connection, and service baked into the school day. And it's something that I'm really proud of.
Up next, I moderate a panel on California's wildfires. What went wrong? Where do we go from here?
This state is crushing it.
For years, we've reported from the Milken Global Conference, interviewing a wide variety of folks. But this year, for the first time, I was invited to moderate one of the sessions.
All right. I love the walkout music. That was fun.
The topic, though, very serious. Recovering from California's wildfires that destroyed more than 17,000 structures in January.
This panel doesn't really need any introductions. We've got the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, Evan Spiegel, founder and CEO of Snapchat, Cindy Kennard, the head of the Annenberg Foundation, and Lindsay Horvath, LA County Supervisor, who represents the Palisades. And Evan Spiegel, you are a son of the Palisades.
On January 7th, Spiegel's dad's home burned to the ground in the Palisades. Spiegel would write this open letter, quote, "Dear Los Angeles, I love you," telling the story of how Snap started at that house.
We were up to about 9 people living in my dad's house in the living room in the basement by the time my dad kicked us out of there to get a real office.
Spiegel co-founded the Department of Angels, a nonprofit to help with recovery.
To really build a block captain infrastructure so that block by block we can get to 100% coverage of folks who have been impacted by the fire, to make sure we're connected with them, that we can help them with the rebuilding process. Most importantly, that we can listen to them so that this is a community-driven recovery.
Bass is responsible for overseeing LA's overall response. She says over 1,000 lots have already been cleared by the Army Corps of Engineers.
That has been going at lightning speed. And so to me, the most important thing to do is to get people back home as fast as possible and to remove any part of the bureaucracy that would hinder people from getting back. And so we opened up a disaster recovery center. We've seen over 9,000 people come through there. We opened up a one-stop rebuilding center. We've had hundreds of folks go through there. We issued our first permits to rebuild within 2 months. We have about 200 people in the pipeline now.
Are you satisfied with the permitting process? Do you think that's moving fast enough? And is there ways that technology could maybe be used to make it go faster?
And we're looking at that right now. We're looking at a couple of things. Number one, the use of artificial intelligence hopefully can speed it up. Because it's one thing to say that we have 200 permits in the pipeline, but there's thousands.
Supervisor Horvath helped to convene a Blue Ribbon Commission recommending best practices for recovery.
We have to call upon the expertise in the community to say, how do we harness all of the energy and the commitment to a full recovery that everyone wants to bring to the table?
Los Angeles!
The Fire Aid 2025 concert raised more than $100 million. And Cindy Kennard's Annenberg Foundation is helping to distribute that money.
It within 3 weeks pushed out $50 million across people that needed food, people that needed housing. Folks, people are still suffering in need of basic needs in our community. One thing I just want to say, and I think it's so important to surface, our governor has asked for $39 billion for this community. We
from the federal government
that money.
Yeah.
Still, questions remain over whether some of this could have been avoided. And the job performance of LADWP CEO Janice Quinones. Taxpayers pay her $750,000 a year.
We were ready for the emergency.
The 117 million gallon Santa Ynez Reservoir was empty when the fire broke out. It had been drained almost a year prior due to a tear in the cover that was never fixed. Several fire hydrants in the Palisades ran out of water at the height of the firefight.
Do you think that she did a good job, and should she continue in that job?
Well, I certainly would not sit here and say she shouldn't continue in her job.
But do you understand how some people see that job performance maybe not meriting $750,000? That's more than you make. That's more than
you
make.
Yeah, but let me just say that the DWP is the nation's largest utility. And if you compare our utility to Omaha, Nebraska, where the salary was around the same, a small town, I mean, a big town maybe in Nebraska, but small compared to Los Angeles. And so to me, I want to get the best talent around the nation. And we did a national search, and that's what it took. She took a significant pay cut to come to work for Los Angeles.
Wow.
Bass demoted Fire Chief Kristen Crowley based off her wildfire response.
Are there more to come? Is there anybody else that you think should be held accountable for what happened here?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of people that should be held accountable, and we're in the process of doing that.
So more people, it sounds like, will be losing their jobs.
Well, it is possible. It is possible because you know that there are investigations that are underway.
Meanwhile, philanthropies are funding a 10-year testing of the water, oil, and soil. Info on that can be found at lafirehealth.org.
I think a really great reflection of team science. These are folks from Stanford, Harvard, USC, UT Austin, UC Davis. Some of the best folks across the country have committed to study this for the next decade to understand the long-term health consequences and to help people make the right choices.
On the government side, Horvath is worried bureaucracy could slow the rebuild.
What's different now? What's a specific change of something that's different going forward?
Setting up a centralized agency that can continue to move quickly, as Army Corps did during the debris removal process, and work at a regional scale, not sort of separate entities all along. I think if we do that, then we're at risk of falling back to the bureaucracy that has held us back in the first place.
Right. So if we can do rapid fire around the horn, try to think of like a sentence or two, if you can, for the response to this. Let's start with this question. Supervisor Horvath, what's the biggest obstacle right now?
Being decentralized. I think the layers of government that people have to go through is the biggest challenge.
Cindy, the biggest obstacle.
I think we have to get that federal money, and we have to get that federal money this summer.
Evan, biggest obstacle you're seeing right now?
Coordination across our very complex layers of governance here.
Mayor.
The insurance industry.
Around the horn on this question, what gives you the most hope right now?
What gives me the most hope is the resilience of the people.
The incredible creative DNA of Los Angeles that I think is going to help us solve, you know, the problems that lie ahead.
That we have the NBA All-Star Game, we have the World Cup, we have the Super Bowl, and we have the Olympics. We have a lot of coming out parties coming up
to see how much people are willing to show up for each other.
When we come back, conversations about what voters really think about President Trump and the Democrats.
This is how I feel.
Political strategist Frank Luntz kicks off his presentation at the Milken Global Conference, showing a slide representing the mood of America, the Statue of Liberty looking angry.
If that was not the Statue of Liberty, that would be me covering my eyes, because we're mad as hell.
We profiled Luntz for years here on The Issue Is, even visiting his home. He's an expert on word choice in politics. We sat down at the conference.
This is the place to be. Trump is at the center of so much, but not just politics, economics.
And the two really go hand in hand, right? I mean, it's the economy, stupid. How important is the economic reality of the country to President Trump's political success?
He rises and falls based on affordability. If the public sees that they have more money in their pockets and bank accounts, he does well. If the public doesn't see that, it hurts him. But he's got the strongest, most intense group of people I have ever seen in my studying politics over the last almost 50 years now. There are some people who supported Trump that don't care whether the market's up or down. They're going to back him anyway. That we haven't seen before.
Voters don't know what that is.
Sarah Longwell is also here. The former Republican strategist now hosts a podcast called The Focus Group for Bulwark.
You talk to people as much as anybody in politics through focus groups. Describe the mood of the country right now.
The country is not in a good mood, especially Democrats and independents, and some Trump voters who voted for Trump specifically because they wanted him to lower prices. They wanted their grocery prices to go down. They wanted to have better housing opportunities. You know, they wanted him to do something positive for the economy. And so all the economic distress has people really freaked out.
Thank you all for coming.
New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof is here to speak with former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and promote his book, Chasing Hope, a memoir of his reporting often on repressive governments.
I have spent a career covering authoritarian regimes, and in so many ways, what President Trump is doing reminds me of what I've seen in other countries. And
how so?
So what authoritarians do is typically they are charismatic people who indeed rise to power through an election. And then they consolidate government power, so they try to bring in the courts under their control, the central bank. There aren't independent agencies. And then they go after the referees of civil society. That means the news media. That means lawyers. That means universities. Well, check, check, check. And, you know, we'll see how far it goes. It's not an on-off switch. It's a dial.
This group not especially encouraged by the opposition party.
What do you make of the Democratic opposition, or lack thereof?
What opposition? I think it's pathetic. I can give you all the reasons why Trump could be doing better right now. I can give you this many reasons why the Democrats aren't even relevant right now. It's not enough to be an opponent. It's not enough to be resistance. Give me an agenda. Give me an alternative, and they haven't done that yet.
The thing I hear from voters all the time, especially Democratic voters, is it's not a fight over whether Democrats become more moderate or more progressive. They want Democrats to be more aggressive. They want to see Democrats standing up to Donald Trump in this moment, pushing back, fighting. And it's not really related to policy. It's about posture and attitude, which is why you see people like Bernie Sanders and AOC, even though people may not be full on with them on their political positions, really being glad that they're out there doing something.
What do you think is the effective path for progressives to fight back in this moment?
I think part of it is getting out of our echo chamber, and that when, especially on the West Coast, when we have largely progressive states and we're all talking to each other, then we tend to repeat sound bites, and we're great at saying that, you know, housing is a human right, but that doesn't actually get people housed. And at the end of the day, we haven't been very good by metrics of housing, of well-being, of education. I mean, we have screwed up. It's not just a matter of denouncing President Trump. It's also a matter of showing that we can govern better.
I mean, one of the problems for Joe Biden was people got so used to Donald Trump setting the tone of the conversation, talking to them all the time, tweeting. And then Joe Biden was just somebody that they didn't see or hear from. And they want somebody that they can see and hear from. They want somebody who's out there and that they feel like standing up to Trump in some ways is standing up for them. And that's what they want.
Our thanks to Frank Luntz. Our thanks to everybody who joined us this week from the Milken Conference. Our thanks to you. All of these interviews can be seen at youtube.com/Alex Michelson. You can see them all in full. You can also watch that panel that we did in full, because obviously we needed to do a lot of editing to get it down to the time that we did there. Big shout out to Debbie Kim, our editor, executive producer, who works so hard on this week's show to get it there. And she does such a great job week after week. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is. A reminder to like, subscribe, send me a message in social media. Love hearing from folks, and appreciate you checking out our show. We'll see you next week with more.